This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kennison and Noel Lim. It is 6 a.m. Thursday, the 13th of August, or as one of our producers likes to say, it's Friday Junior, because we're this much closer to the weekend. But, you know, in the meantime, we've had a pretty decent week of it so far. What do you think, Noel?
Yes, not too bad. Some news here and there. Quite a lot on the international front, though.
Yeah, it's been quite a heavy week on the international front, particularly with everything that's been happening in the US.
I guess also the question is, when is it not a heavy situation on the international front? It always seems like there's something going on. I think about there's always either US-China tensions or some other situation. Of course, the this week we had the situation in Lebanon, which was... which was scary to say the least, but so we'll be taking a look at more stuff at 6:30 when it comes to the international scene.
Yeah, so we're looking at New Zealand, UK, as well as you know, some gambling hub that reopens for business.
Yeah, I think because as people start to sort of somewhat move back to a semblance of normal, right? But before that, in about 10 minutes, so what are we going to be talking about, Roshan?
Actually, in a related note, right, whenever we hear about the UK or New Zealand for that matter, education is also a part and parcel of the perspective when it comes to Malaysians, especially Malaysian parents who are looking to send their kids overseas. Australia is also, of course, one of those options. And we'll be taking a look at how, because A-level exams may not be going on, trial exams are going to become more important, or moderated exams will become more important. Maybe and take a look at the implicit bias there is in there if there's no central body that moderates the exams.
All right, and if you want to weigh in on those conversations, remember you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we're taking a look at meat alternatives and whether or not they'll be successful in pushing real meat out of the market. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. That was Sultans of Swing by Dire Straits. And now, this morning, we're taking a look at the food industry and the developments that we've seen, particularly arising out of the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, you've heard the saying that the enemy of your enemy is your friend, right? So it appears that in the fight against alternative meats, the purveyors of real meat and factory farmers are actually forming something of an alliance, despite the fact that in the past their relationship was acrimonious at best. And this is underpinned by the fact that in the US, there was a Nielsen report that during the first few weeks of the lockdown there, US grocery stores saw sales of faux meat products increase by 264%. So I guess, you know, in the face of that, you're wondering, and as everyone wonders what habits out of the lockdowns and COVID-19 you'll be taking with you into the future, the food industry is perhaps feeling a little bit threatened.
Yeah, so I think the reasons why there has been a spike in consumer demand for imitation meats, the reason is about illnesses at meat packing plants, the possible spread of diseases from industrial livestock operations, and even fears about the animal origins of COVID-19. So I am also curious whether this particular habit of, you know, taking becoming more vegetarian, or, you know, taking on more meat alternatives, whether that itself will be a sticky habit. And I think maybe much depends on how concerned we continue to be about our health and also about income levels, right? Because at least in the West, meat alternatives are not, you know, not cheap.
Yeah, I mean, when we think about the new age meat alternatives, you're thinking about Impossible Foods or Beyond Meat, mm-hmm. and I mean, if I remember Beyond Meat's financial results, they did really well considering the fact that grocery store sales, kind of offset the fact that the food they used to sell to restaurants was down because restaurants weren't doing well.
Yeah, I think Beyond Meat's IPO, was it last year? I think that was one of the most successful IPOs of the year. And the last time I saw their kind of results and analytics on the Bloomberg terminal, they were trading at 400 times PE, something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, but I think the demand there is still quite mm-hmm. strong in groceries. And, you know, Noel, when you brought up the illness factor there, now the concern was in the US, a lot of the COVID-19 clusters were started in, or at least spread because of factory meat factories, because of the conditions that the workers are subjected to in there. It's very cold, it's very packed, and if just one person in there kind of spreads it very quickly. So a few states in the country kind of saw their infections start from these premises. So I think this also adds into that whole fear around it, and especially because of the uncertainty around the virus itself. People aren't sure whether it can be contracted from livestock and how does it spread. Even though at this point, I don't think it's a very clear fact at this point. I don't think that's a situation.
No, and I think you're right in the sense that even in other countries, like I think China has seen a couple of incidents happen at slaughterhouses, at markets where there is a wide purveyance of meats, but. I mean, even before the coronavirus pandemic started, there was a lot of concern over the existing meat industry because of the greenhouse gases that factory farms produce. Because beef, for example, is one of the, you know, the raising of cows. And it's one of the most polluting food industries you could possibly imagine. And factory farms have a dire impact on the environment around them because of the amount of waste that gets pumped into the rivers and the soil in the region. But it also raised questions of antibiotic resistance because of the packed nature of factory farming. Illness was a big problem amongst animals. And even if you put aside animal welfare concerns, the antibiotics that had to be used to treat those illnesses made its way into our meats and then gave rise to different kinds of mutations in bacteria that we were already struggling with prior to the outbreak of a global pandemic.
Yeah, so I think the problem is also like, you know, steroids being injected into the cows and you know, animals. And so that also does give rise to some health concerns, right, because we're ingesting all that meat. But I have to say this also, you know, like for meat alternatives, they're also made of soy products. And soy is actually not necessarily suitable for everyone, right? So people are also concerned about that. And I have tried Impossible Burgers. Well, so I tried that in UK, and I have to say, I think it was a bit dry, that burger that I had, and even the waiter asked me, "What do you think?" And he was trying to solicit feedback, right? I said, "Oh, yeah, I think I could get used to it, but you know, it did make me think that, you know, a soy product doesn't mean that it's more healthy, right? It's just if anything, if I will convert, it's just because I feel like I don't want to eat meat anymore, you know, just for humane reasons."
Yeah, I think that's one of those things, right? Because the Beyond Meat and Impossible Food products are not cheap. They definitely cater to a different category of the population. But at the same time, being vegetarian, there are different options there. But I guess this is not really around that. It's around the market demand for it and how these two alternatives to protein, I guess, will play out. Because I personally will want to wait a few more years to see how Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat are kind of set with the early adopters, right? And then maybe we'll take a look at it. At this point, I'm just going to stick to what I know. But that's, of course, a very personal opinion because this is still a personal choice. At the end of the day, not everything works for everyone.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it is a personal choice. What goes onto your plate and what goes into your mouth, basically, right? But I think the other interesting element that will be fascinating to watch is going to be the PR war that appears to be breaking out between the food industry players and the farmers and the mock meat industry, because it's, you know, you're already starting to see ads about the highly processed nature of the alternative meat substitutes like Beyond Meat and like Impossible Foods. So whether or not this will catch on and make a dent in the demand that we're seeing grow for these kinds of alternative meat products, I guess that remains to be seen. But let us know what you think about this. Is alternative meat here to stay? You can WhatsApp us 01878988999 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some messages coming up and then we're taking a look at the exam industry. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Upside Down by Diana Ross, and you are listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. 6:20 in the morning, Thursday the 13th of August, and now we're taking a look at the subject of exams and universities, because over in the UK there has been news that GCSE and A-level results were expected to be awarded based on predictive grades. So this was something that came out early in the, kind of during the lockdown. When ordinarily they would have been receiving their grades or sitting for exams. And this, you know, everyone's, this is cropped up again because it's starting to be about the time that students would have begun their university first semesters. And there is still concern over whether or not using predictive grades or using mock exam results will in the at the end of the day, disadvantage certain groups of students more than others. Because, you know, whatever else you say about standardized testing and, you know, the students that it leaves on the fringes, the fact that the examinations are conducted by an external board means that those results will be free, well, freer of any kind of implicit bias that might crop up as a from the teachers themselves in the schools.
Yeah, so so this thing sparked a big debate in the UK recently. I think it started in Scotland, where you know students are teachers are allowed to grade their students, right? And but the exam results in Scotland were then downgraded by a central body, through a moderation process. And what made it controversial, or rather very debatable, was the fact that pupils in the most deprived areas of Scotland had their exam pass rate downgraded by more than twice that of students from the wealthiest parts of the country. So you can imagine there were some protests and, you know, like some, you know, some placards I see up here, stop the postcode lottery. And so naturally, then the government in Scotland, at least, they reversed their decision and said that, okay, fine, students can actually use their mock exam results rather than the moderated results. Then this led to another debate because are you being politically popular by, you know, doing that?
Yeah, I think that's quite interesting, right? Because there are a few things at play. One is whenever you do any form of standardization, it does impact, you are subjecting everyone from different communities and different backgrounds to the same set of exams. And it really reminds me of the, I think the analogy of if you judge a bird by how it swims, it's going to fail that exam. I may have made up that analogy. I don't know. We'll
find
out.
But it's a good analogy.
But it's that, right? Or if you judge a monkey by how it flies, it's going to fail. That's the similar situation here. And I don't know how true this is, but I remember in school, I was often told that different districts have different grading belts, grading curves. And this is something that was meant to elicit a form of like, okay, the better areas, better schools, you've got
more resources, you've got
right?
more teachers.
And
that kind of thing.
That's the situation we're seeing here, that there is a gap between rural areas, urban areas, wealthier areas. I think one of the placards was the Stop the Postcode Lottery, right? Which is basically the better schools go to the better areas. And how do you offset that? How do you take that into consideration? Because the education gap is a serious concern to not just the UK, but I think communities across the globe.
Yeah, it is a dilemma, especially when politics becomes involved in the equation, right? Because as much as we say that education shouldn't be political, considering that you know the education system churns through the future voters and everyone is concerned about education, it inevitably becomes political. The Guardian ran a piece, I think it was in March, talking about how the usage of mock exams and trial results disproportionately disadvantage BAME students. So, for example, Black British American students, Black and Asian students, because, for example, you know, a student from a white affluent family, when the teachers themselves are the ones awarding the results, there have been cases of, you know, the parents coming to the school and saying that, hey, my child is not a B, my child's an A+ student, and then the teachers will have to take that into account for their own peace and sanity, you know, and their continued career progression at the school. So then it just means that the grading curve becomes even more inaccurate at the end of the day.
Yeah, so, you know, in some schools, we know parents do play a much more active role. They are very influential, and that can, and they're often in these, you know, wealthier schools or private schools. And so that's why you have that situation. More exam results aside, just the mere formal standardized testing, right, A-levels, O-levels, it is by design unfair because, you know, people come in at different levels, right? And so this is where the implicit bias is already built in. But then what you have then, universities, employers, scholarship providers will then have to look at personal statements to make sure that, you know, results is one thing, but how far did this person come? You know, how fast did this person jump just in order to do well in exams? That should be taken into account.
Well, let us know what you think. You know, how concerned are you over exam delays and the entry into university during this coronavirus pandemic? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have the 6:30 news bulletin coming up, but first, Jump by Van Halen, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Feel Good Inc. by Gorillaz, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn-Mark Grushenkanison and Noel Lim. It is 6:30, 9 a.m. Thursday, the 13th of August, and we're taking a look this morning at stories from around the world. New Zealand is first on our list this morning because it appears that there are going to be some there may be some delays in dissolving Parliament amidst a coronavirus outbreak that has been found in the country. Now, it's a small outbreak; it is a cluster of four infected family members. But this is notable because this is the first detection of any kind of local transmission of the virus in over 100 days in New Zealand.
Yes, I think what made it complicated, although it's only four members and that caused the government to lock down Auckland. And the reason for that is because they're not sure where the source came from,
yes.
Right? I mean, where the virus came from. So I think that really concerned New Zealand. You know, I cannot help but look to New Zealand with envy. Four cases, lockdown, like, okay.
Good yeah,
for
but
you.
It's because
and panic buying too happening.
I guess it's also because of the fact that that key phrase there, right? They don't know where it came from. Now, that's why it's so important to do contact tracing. And I understand the general concerns over your information and all of that. But right now, there is a much bigger issue at hand. If we cannot contact trace, the entire area needs to be shut down, right? The entire, you see the CMCO, or was it the most strict MCO?
EMCO?
I can't remember. Yes, EMCO. I remember. There's so many phrases at this point. But basically, the really strict lockdown where
the really,
they
really bad one.
Gate your entire area.
Oh, that would be TEMCO, is it? The Temporary Enforcement MCO.
I'm not sure what it was, but basically, MCO. It comes down to this. If the government cannot identify where the virus came from, then they're going to have to take drastic actions to make sure there's no spread. Because we don't want to go back to where the situation was 6 months ago, or 4 months ago at this point. I mean, right now we're seeing second quarter GDP numbers come out and it's double digit
contractions.
These are numbers unseen in over in almost a decade, right, at this point. I think the UK also saw its numbers there. They were not good. And tomorrow Malaysia's GDP numbers come out. So that's something to pay attention to.
Yeah, and the dissolution of the New Zealand Parliament was supposed to take place on Wednesday, and that's been delayed. So it looks like a decision on the subject is going to be made on Monday, because you know if a portion of the country has gone in once again into lockdown, I mean opposition members are up in arms because they're saying that it's not fair to dissolve Parliament and then expect them to enter the campaign period for a new general election while they can't actually go out and campaign. And this is something that we are also going to be navigating as we head into the Sabah state elections.
I guess it is a valid question, but at the same time, extend it for how long, right? How long do you postpone this? And then if we look on the flip side, in the US, where Donald Trump raised the same concern of wanting to delay the US election, which is held on the, is it the second Tuesday of every of November?
It's the 3rd of November this time.
This the 3rd of November this time. It is something that was really pushed back against because there are concerns over his leadership and where he will take that sentiment. That said, it's not unheard of for elections to be held. We saw elections in Korea take
Singapore as well,
and Singapore. It is possible if the SOPs are done in place. I think New Zealand has done a fantastic job overall, despite the fact that the virus is still there, in terms of organizing and educating the public and really clamping down on it early, really forward-looking leadership. But with the US, it is a way more complicated situation. And I can understand legitimate concerns for wanting to delay the election, but it is such an entrenched thing in their electoral and their political system. Is that even a realistic thing?
Yeah, I think with the US, they have much bigger concerns, right? About 5 million cases now, and six-digit number in terms of number of people who have died from COVID-19. And we're speaking about recessions, right? I think the UK reported they shrank by 20% in the second quarter of 2020, the worst quarterly slump, I think, in 11 years.
Yeah, I think Singapore's GDP also came out, and that was the worst result that they'd seen in 55 years, so pretty much since independence.
Yeah.
And we're expecting our own GDP numbers as well tomorrow, so we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, I think the last contraction we had was after the global financial crisis. I think that was 2009. And if based on the fact that the UK had their last contraction 11 years ago, that also runs nicely with the GFC. And I have to say, this is probably as big a crisis as the GFC at that point. The GFC was mostly concerned with the US banking system and the spillover effects from there.
Yeah, this is probably much worse.
This is a much more spread out, fragmented crisis that spans the globe, really.
Yeah, so I guess everybody's going to be watching the announcement out of Bank Negara tomorrow very closely. But right now we have some messages for you, and then we're going to be looking at our own local papers and portals. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was signed, sealed and delivered by Stevie Wonder, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noel. Now, we've had some responses this morning to our discussions. Ro has WhatsApped in. Hi Ro, long time no see. He said, I don't doubt fake meat is badly processed, but please remember much real meat is often injected with steroids and by far the lesser of all evils, in that no animals led a torturous life were then slaughtered so that we humans could indulge in an oversized burger and a child could waste half of his. Yes, I think this is a point that really does need to be re-emphasized, you know, time and time again. But so it's interesting to see how the PR war is evolving. I think in the US there was an ad that went to air which showed a child at a spelling bee struggling to spell the word methylcellulose, and the definition for that word was a chemical laxative commonly used in simulated meat. So, you know, whether or not this is actually true or whether it's cherry picking the facts, it doesn't really matter when it's in an ad, and that's, you know, that's all the information that people are going to get, right?
How did you remember that word, and how did you remember the definition?
I was even thinking, how do
seriously.
I even spell that?
I'm just staring at. I mean, it's sad that we don't have videos in here to see Noel and our faces. Stop. Did you do spelling bees when you were in school?
No, I did chemistry, and I did love chemistry. So that
as a child,
yes, I did.
As a child or as a teenager?
Yeah, but it is something. Speaking of chemistry, I mean, these fake meat products or alternative meat products like Beyond Meat and Impossible Burgers, what they are is basically it's lab grown meat, right? It's not a soy based. I mean, they're meant to mimic the chemical composition, or they're trying to mimic the chemical composition of the meat. So really, you know, the branding around this and the PR war is going to be it's real meat, just made in a lab. That's what they're trying to go for. And I mean, give them a few years. If they start, I mean, and I don't see anyone getting side effects from it, then maybe I will consume that, because this is a real concern, right? So factory farming has an impact on the planet in terms of just when you put that many animals in one area, it's bad for the animals, it's bad for the meat that they grow themselves and all of that. So it is, I mean, we are looking at alternatives. Let's see how we can go.
Yeah, it's too bad, right? Cows fart and, you know, they pollute the environment.
It's a bit more than just the gases they release.
I'm simplifying and being facetious about it.
Oh,
okay, well, let's also take a look this morning at our local papers.
You mean that was not the local headline?
Cow spotting? No,
yeah,
no,
we don't live
not.
In a bangsa bubble.
Okay, the Star this morning in front of me, hammering it home. So this is talking about the fact that illegal gambling activities particularly, will not be tolerated in Sungai Buloh or anywhere else in the country. So this is as Bukit Aman is looking into allegations that enforcement authorities are on the take from offenders. I think this is a continuous continuation of another story as well that I saw, I think yesterday or the day before yesterday, that said ignorance is not going to be a defense for landlords whose properties are being used as a base for these kind of illegal gambling dens.
Yeah, so looking at New Straits Times, big headline here, don't bought Sputnik 5 yet. Malaysia should not rush.
Not bad.
Yeah, Malaysia should not rush into obtaining the Russian vaccine against COVID-19. And experts say the lack of clinical trial data makes it virtually impossible to know if the vaccine is safe. But I think the Russians are claiming that they have already done all the necessary trials. We'll trust them to work ahead of time. The Russians claim that several Latin American, Middle Eastern and Asian countries have apparently expressed interest in purchasing their vaccines.
And I've got the Malaysian Reserve in front of me, and it looks like Tun Dr. Mahathir has finally picked a name for his party. His what was formerly unnamed is now called Pejuang. I wonder why it's called Pejuang. That's a real head scratcher there. What message is he trying to send?
I have to say, you know, when they first came out with that picture, all of them crossing their arms, I'm not sure even if that picture came from them officially or it was just a meme. But, you know, the first thought that came to my mind, oh, the Musketeers.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's going to be very interesting indeed to see where this yet another new party goes. We've also had the COVID-19 bill tabled in Parliament for its first reading. So that's going to be, that's definitely on our radar as well. And we'll be keeping an eye out for any developments out of that.
And I've also, we just want to point out, there's one story in Malaysia Kini. Employers retrenching staff without informing Labour Department. This is a statement from Human Resources Minister M. Saravanan, who basically, when it comes to retrenchment in the country, employers have to get in touch with the Labour Department and inform them. There are processes involved there. So as an employee, you have to educate yourself about your rights, because it's not a clear cut. Companies can't just tell you to go. You know, there is a process that needs to be done. A lot of it goes through the Labour Department. So just be aware of that. And I mean, I think this just highlights the ongoing concern around unemployment. And next month, when the loan moratorium ends for everybody and now it kicks into a targeted moratorium, there are going to be concerns that businesses who have to start taking up their loans are not going to be able to pay those loans, and more businesses could shut down and more jobs are lost. So even though things are looking okay now, even whatever Q2 numbers we get tomorrow, everyone needs to be aware that it's not over yet. I mean, the recovery
the Q3
is not,
numbers yes. is
the crunch Q3
time.
Is going to be interesting. Also, even though job numbers have come back up, we could see a dip in October, in November, depending on how businesses do and can afford their own payments.
And of course, on page 6 of the Star as well, in along a similar vein, there's an article here: 162 fined, 18 held for violating the RMCO. Because guys, you know, we have to remember that it isn't business as usual just yet. We still have to adhere to SOPs. We still have to wear masks in public places, and basically maintain the safety not just of ourselves but also the people around us.
Yeah. So Parliament is still ongoing, and so there's a piece of news here by Sina Harian. So they, the minister of law, Datuk Taqiyuddin Hassan, was asked how much would it cost if there was a snap election, and he said the figure is about 1.2 billion ringgit, and so that's a lot of money if, you know, a snap elections was called, because they have to implement SOPs and all that. It's a decision, right? Spend money or uphold democracy.
Are we going to need another supply budget for that to pay for that snap election?
Well, democracy. More money.
We'll have to wait and see. And all right, we're heading into the 7 o'clock news bulletin now. But don't go away. After that, we'll be bringing you more business news and analysis. But first, When I Come Around by Green Day, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.